I mean, I guess the hammer really was big ass enough.
I guess the hammer truly was big ass enough, and the big ass hammer was the friends we made along the way.
So true.
Hello and welcome to Hour the 100 podcast, brought to you by the Aficionados Podcast Network. My name is Robin Jeffrey. I'm 28, but by the time that you hear this, I will be 29. I like brooding anti-heroes and feminist agendas, and I remember way too many details that no one else cares about. You can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey pretty much everywhere, and our fun fact for this episode is, what's your favorite card game? Because in Mount Weather, they do be playing card games. I do play a lot of Go Fish and Uno at my job. As, you know, just a break for the kids, they like to, like, play card games. But I would say that if I had to pick, like, a favorite, it would be, like, not Cards Against Humanity, but the, like, kind of, like, card game-esque thing where it's, like, you have cards and then you lay down other cards.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of, like, not Cards Against Humanity, but, like, games like that. I have one called Overrated where they, like, give you a place and then you have, like, a bunch of different, like, ratings. Like, 5 stars this, 5 or 0 stars that.
Uh-huh.
And then you put down those and then pick out whichever one's the funniest. So that's, I guess that's my favorite one.
Nice.
Yeah.
And that's so stupid. My name is Samantha Coley. I'm a 31-year-old news editor at Collider. I like over 40s OTPs and making playlists. I'm on Twitter at Sam Casey's, where you can find me yelling about television and fangirling middle-aged actresses. My favorite card game, I would say the one I play most frequently, like, in my recent years, is probably either Flux or Cards Against Humanity. And both of those are super fun, depending on, like, as long as there's a good group that I'm playing with.
Yeah, exactly.
And Flux is fun because there's, like, a lot of different versions of it. So you can buy ones that are, like, specific to, like, the thing you're into. So I have a couple of Star Trek ones. And so you have to, like, the objective changes throughout the game depending on what card is on top of the pile. And what cards you have to get, which are, like, ships and characters and, like, just different elements from the show change depending on what that top card is and, like, what the rules are. And so that's always fun because it's different every time. But I would say the one that I loved most growing up and that you can play with, like, a classic deck of cards is just Rummy, because my mom taught me how to play it, and it's basically you just phase 10 with a regular deck of cards.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. And I want people to know that usually my beverage of choice for these podcasts is water, but today I am drinking a 750 milliliter carton of chocolate milk.
I love that for you.
I just want everyone to know.
I had a little chocolate milk beverage earlier because I was having a mental breakdown during work, and my wife went and got me a mocha from JJ Bean, so life...
I like her.
Life was better after that because she's the best.
Yeah. Also, today we have words to say about episode 209 of The 100, Remember Me.
This episode may contain spoilers for all 7 seasons of The 100. It definitely will because I throw shade at Clark in my summer.
Perfect. So, yeah, the title, we're supposed to remember Finn or something, I guess. But every time I read the name of the episode, I just start singing the song from Coco. Every single time. Remember Me. Like, I cannot... I cannot read it without that going on in my brain, so.
It is a compulsion.
That's the life I'm living. Yeah. This is the first episode of The 100 to air in 2015, so shout out. It's been almost 10 years, and this is the last episode in which Thomas McDonald is a member of the main cast, so bye! we are doing 2 storylines this episode, Mount Weather and not Mount Weather, and I covered Mount Weather.
Thank you for your service.
So let me grab my notes. Of course, no problem at all.
I feel like every time I do this episode, or I, like, would rewatch this episode, I would skip the Mount Weather parts.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of, like, okay, we have to do a thing. Does the thing.
Yeah. Okay, this is my summary for the Mount Weather storyline. Monty, Miller, Maya, and Jasper are still trying to figure out where Harper went. Monty wants to get a message out to their people, but Maya says there's only one room where that would be possible, and it's too restricted. Monty wants to burrow into the wall from behind to get to the wires and stuff that he needs. Elsewhere, Cage is getting briefed by Emerson on what Lexa and Clark are doing. They don't like that they're teaming up. Our friends get to the art warehouse and find the correct wall. An alarm sounds, thanks to Maya, and Miller breaks into the wall using a large hammer. Monty eventually realizes that Mount Weather is what crashed the Exodus ship. They get the message broadcasting, but their signal is still jammed. He needs to get into the command center. Maya says they can't for various reasons. A guard comes, so they put a portrait in front of the hole they made. It falls down, and Maya goes to fix it. They don't have time to run away now, so Jasper kisses Maya to make the guard think they were just canoodling. Back at the door, Monty is missing. We see him sneaking his way into the command center by saying that he's doing some follow-up decontamination. He's able to unjam the frequency and get the message out. Cage and Emerson get to the room and are suspicious of Monty. As he leaves, Emerson comments that he forgot to log the decon session. Monty just writes whatever the last person wrote, which turns out to be the wrong answer. Monty is caught. He wakes up in a cage by Harper, who notes that there are enough cages for all of them. Yikes.
Dun dun dun!
Would you say yikes? I would say yikes if it was me.
I would definitely say yikes.
I would agree that yikes. So we have Monty and Miller playing cards, and Maya and Jasper enter. Miller turns up the radio so that nobody can hear, which is like their classic move, and they're still trying to figure out what happened to Harper. Jasper says, you know, someone must have seen something. Miller says, where is she? Like, this place is sealed. We're just confused. Jasper says she must be in, like, some rooms that aren't mapped, potentially, or maybe some rooms aren't mapped, generally. Mm-hmm. Maya says probably not, but, like, maybe. Miller says, cool, thanks for the help. There are too many characters whose names starts with M in this scene. It's really making writing my notes very difficult when I was doing them. I was like, M-I for Miller, M-A for Maya, M-O for Monty. I was like, this is so much extra work. Can we just not? Please. At least they don't have the same second letter. That would have been a whole thing.
Yeah.
Because when I'm doing my Lost notes and Sawyer and Saeed are both in the same scene, I'm just like, what?
Oh, man.
Now I have to do S-A-W and S-A-Y, and that's just too much for me. I'm just a baby. Jasper tells Miller to chill out because Maya is helping them and, like, is risking more than them, basically. She's risking, like, her entire life and livelihood and where she lives.
Correct.
To help them. But Miller says, you know, as if she's gonna get punished like we would get punished if she's caught. Like, I doubt it or whatever. But I feel like they would see her as a traitor, you know? They would, like...
Exactly.
I feel like she could get in big trouble.
I think so, too.
For sure. So Monty finds something on the map, something about a radio, and he wants to send a message to the Ark. Maya says there's only one radio, and it's, like, highly restricted on level 7. Jasper says, you know, we've done it before, we've gotten in there before. And Maya says that's because it was being decontaminated, like, it's not gonna work again for, like, a while, because we don't decontaminate that regularly, basically. Like, it happens regularly, but not very often.
Mm-hmm.
And Monty goes, I'm gonna remember this for later, and I'm gonna ignore it!
Oh, so yeah.
He says it's fine, we only really need these wires. And Maya says, okay, well, I can get you into this art warehouse, or the art warehouse, which is, like, behind the command center where these wires are. So Monty says, okay, it's still gonna be really hard, and he lists all the things that are gonna be hard about it. And Miller's like, oh, that's it? And he's like, no, he keeps listing more hard things, and we also need a big ass hammer. Can I just say, Monty asks for a big ass hammer here, right?
Uh-huh. Yes, he does.
And then later Miller brings in the big ass hammer.
Correct.
And he says, and I quote, big ass enough for you?
Yeah.
Who wrote that?
This.
It was horrible.
This episode, while I enjoy some of the acting choices in it quite a bit, the writing is just okay.
Yeah. Yeah, truly that. Like, there are a few moments where you're like, nice. But a lot of moments where you're like, oh no.
It's very much like, people sure talk like that, huh?
Especially for an episode that was the first episode after a hiatus.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is this? Like, I like a lot of the plot points, especially in the outside of Mount Weather stuff.
Uh-huh.
But some of it's real dumb. Like, we'll talk about Finn, but wow.
Honestly, I enjoy this episode specifically for my background crumbs that I get in the other storyline. However, I could not tell you what happens between, like, here and episode 213 to save my life. Like, I know there's, like, the giant monkey storyline in the next episode, I think. And then after that, I'm like,
I think something like that.
I'm like, something happens. They move around a little bit.
Yeah. Like, Bellamy.
Bellamy gets caught.
Yeah, Bellamy starts going into Mount Weather.
Yeah.
Murphy goes off with Jaha. The bomb happens.
Yeah, like, once the bomb happens, I'm like, oh, yeah. We're back to being interesting.
Yeah.
Right? But it takes a minute.
Yeah. So, elsewhere, Emerson briefs Cage on, like, the info that they have about Lexa and Clark. You know, we saw the Outsiders, which is, like, you know, the Grounders. They didn't attack the Ark, but they also didn't withdraw, so we're not really sure what's going on. Emerson says, like, they make alliances under this commander, so they might be doing that, and we can try to break it if that's what's happening, and we're just trying to basically let them kill each other so that they don't come here. Which is interesting because, you know, I feel like that's what Clark is saying. Like, she's coming up and she's being like, they want us to kill each other. You know, like, she knows what their plan is or what their hopes are.
And she's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know she was literally in there, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but she wasn't in, like, the command room listening to the, like, you know, she's just smart. She's smart like that.
She has good instincts. Like, at this current present time, Clark still has good instincts.
Right.
Before she gets a lobotomy.
Yeah, right. And Cage is so, like, overconfident. What's the word? Like, you know, arrogant, basically. He's like, they're not going to get past our defenses. It's not a big deal. And, I mean, then, like, three episodes from now, Bellamy's, like, literally inside Mount Weather, literally in a Mount Weather guard costume, and you're like, oh, what you said, you were saying?
Uh-huh.
So Emerson is like, well, we should be careful just in case, and, like, I'm, like, here looking at Emerson, and I'm just like, oh my god, how did we get to Emerson in season three chained up in the throne room, or, like, whatever, like...
From the bottom of my heart.
It's just, oh...
I hate Emerson so bad.
Oh my god, he's horrible.
Like, right now, at this present time, he hasn't done anything to make me want to rip his eyeballs out. However, in season three...
However.
That is the worst man I've ever seen in my life. And I want him dead.
I mean, like, to be fair, it is very interesting that this man who's clearly, like, so innocuous and, like, doesn't seem to really matter that much in the whole scheme of things ends up being a character with more longevity than, like, Cage and Wallace.
Yeah.
So, like, I do think that's interesting. I just hate him so much.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Like, of all the people in Mount Weather, he was not the one I expected to be the one Mount Weather person surviving this.
Exactly.
Season. You know?
So,
yeah, so Emerson is like, well, we should be careful just in case, and Cage is like, nothing will stop us from getting to the ground, and I'm like, except for a lever, as always. It's always a lever.
That darned lever.
So the four of our heroes end up in the art warehouse. Monty finds the right wall, they move the art, and Miller gets the giant hammer, and I appreciate them moving the art. Like, obviously it's easier to break through, but also, like, please save the art at Jasper in season three.
Oh, yeah, right?
Yeah. Like, seems important. And then Miller talks about a big-ass hammer, but he says, is this big-ass enough? I'll never get over it. I'll never get over it. Like, Jared really had to say that line.
Yeah.
He read the script and he went, guess I have to say this. So Maya says, no, hold on, it's gonna be too loud. Miller's like, she just doesn't want us to leave so that they can take our blood. And I'm like, Miller, okay, chill, please, because if she was against you, she wouldn't be here.
Yeah, she would just rat you out. Right? This is so much work for, like, if she's not already in on the plan. You know what I mean? Like, she doesn't have to, like, create an elaborate...
Like, why did she bring you all the way over here?
She doesn't have to, like, do some elaborate thing to... If she's trying to throw you under the bus. She could just say, hey, kill these people.
Yeah, exactly. So Maya's like, Kate, dude, I'm trying to help you. So, like, hate me if you want, but at least recognize that what I'm doing is, like, an attempt to do the right thing, basically. So Miller's like, okay, get out of my way. And she says, hold on, just wait 5 seconds. The alarm sounds, and Maya says, like, you know, a friend owed me a favor. And I feel like this is maybe, and I know that I'm pretty sure before now Maya has said something like, you know, not all of us feel this way, not all of us think it's okay or whatever, but, like, this is sort of the first tangible moment of us seeing somebody else on the inside who's willing to help their cause other than Maya.
Yeah, for sure.
So she's like, yeah, a friend owed me a favor, do it now. The wall, far too easy to break through.
Yeah, that's a little bit...
Simply a sledgehammer.
I mean...
Concrete? Question mark?
I mean, I guess the hammer really was big ass enough.
I guess the hammer truly was big ass enough, and the big ass hammer was the friends we made along the way.
So true.
So true. That has to be it. And then they find what they're looking for on the other side, so yay, great for them. Next scene, Monty's, like, saying some science stuff, and they hear this, like, weird static that they heard on the black box of the Exodus ship, so that means that the people who crashed the Exodus ship, or the reason for the Exodus ship crashing, was Mount Weather. So when they say Exodus ship,
yeah,
do they mean drop ship, or do they mean, like, when they brought the whole arc down.
No, I think they mean the ship that Cape Vernon was on.
Oh, the ship that Diana and co were on. Ah, okay, gotcha. So who cares? We hate them. But yeah.
Like, I know for sure, but like the fact that Mount Weather deliberately crashed it was such an interesting thing, in my opinion. And I thought it was kind of lame that they never really, like, fully explored that, because I thought that was such a gag-worthy moment when they figure it out, and then it went
right
nowhere.
I think my problem is that there are too many ships that came down that I'm like, okay, which one's that? Like, I don't remember which one that is.
No, it's definitely the Diana one, but it's like
gotcha.
Because that's the only one that has a black box that they had.
Right. Yeah.
Stuff from. But I thought it was fascinating I didn't know why they would crash it. Because wouldn't you assume,
Right, don't you feel like big dum-dums now that you know that sky people can save your lives?
Exactly. It's like, why did you do that when you're trying to literally steal all these people's bone marrow? You just lost yourself a whole supply. Also, what did you gain from crashing it? Because it didn't really, like, it just would have made the grounders and the sky people, it escalated their war. But, like, you didn't really actually gain anything from it because you, it's just so stupid. It went nowhere and it was so cool.
I don't know.
The 100 story is, it was so cool and then it went nowhere.
Yeah. So Jasper's like, what are they even jamming? Monty's like, everything, basically, to stop everyone from talking to each other.
Yeah.
And Jasper's like, are we totally screwed? And Monty's like, no, give me a second, let me think about it. So then we leave and then we come back and Monty's still working on it. And he says, now we've gotten our message broadcasting, but it's still jammed. How they had a microphone or something to record Jasper is unclear to me. But who knows, whatever, I guess. But anyway, the frequency is still jammed, so basically it's not helpful at all.
Right.
And I feel like we've got, like, a lost reference in the making here, and then I feel like later they really, like, bring it home that it is a lost reference. So we'll talk about it later, I think. But I'm like, at this point in the episode, I'm like, I feel like this is something. Something is percolating in my little lost brain. So Miller's like, hey, can we unjam it? And Monty's like, that's kind of the thing I'm trying to do. Like, I've tried to unjam it. I need to shut it down from the source. Can you get me 5 minutes in the command center? And Jasper says, no, it's too dangerous. And Maya's like, crap, we've run out of time. Like, they're coming. We need to cover the hole. And she, like, is running back in, is like, quick. Y'all really put another woman on lookout. Please.
Be for real.
Are you for real right now? Be so for real right now.
Right.
You literally were like, we put Harper out in the hallway, and then she got snatched. Who should be on the lookout this time?
The girl.
Whoever's the most dispensable? Like, do not care for that.
So stupid.
You know, like, part of me is like, obviously she's Mount Weather, right? So if anyone saw her, they would be like, oh, hey, Maya. You know, it wouldn't be, like, weird or whatever. But exactly. Still, it's the principle of the thing for me.
I feel like if it hadn't just happened to Harper, it wouldn't be weird. But because it just happened to Harper, it's like, hang on a second.
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're telling me that Maya is less helpful in all of that wire stuff than Miller?
Right. I simply, like, don't believe you.
Okay, fine. Harper wouldn't be as helpful in the thing. Like, you know, Jasper's main idea guy, whatever. But Jasper's like, obviously Monty needs to be in here. Miller's a thief. He needs to be in here. Okay. But in this circumstance, Miller does not need to be here.
No.
Miller is the least helpful person here, I think. So anyway, they put the painting up and, you know, Miller and Monty run off and Maya puts up the painting, but then it falls, so they go back and replace it, but now there's no time to run, basically, right? The guard would see them running away and be, like, suspicious and probably go look at that painting, right?
Yeah.
So Maya's like, what do we do? Jasper kisses her. Honestly, romance.
It's so cute.
This is a great moment for Maya and Jasper.
I love the quick, we have to kiss for plot reasons trope. I love.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, that's the reason why we're doing it. Not that I've been thinking about it for a while.
Yeah, it's such a cute trope. Because it almost always is like, oh, that's an interesting development. You know what I mean?
Yes. And it's like, also, it's between two people who are like both too scared to really make that first move.
Uh-huh.
And so it's like, if it happens and it doesn't work out, then they can just be like, I just did it for the plan or to save the whatever, not because I like you or whatever, you know? So yeah, it's really cute.
Exactly.
It just ends up working out for them. Sort of. And, you know, not by the end of the season, but.
Well, briefly.
Yeah, briefly. And so, yeah, the guard thinks they're just, like, canoodling in there, and it's honestly a good plan.
Yeah.
It worked. Yeah. However, I feel like everyone knows everyone here, right? Like, how many people are in Mount Weather? Do they ever say? I feel like they must have.
I think that they do, but I don't remember what the number is. It's a very small number, but it's because, like, incest.
It's small enough for everybody to know everyone, I think, right?
Brittany's face.
So I feel like the guard, like, walks in and is like, oh my god, it's Maya and one of the space kids. Whoa, juicy gossip, I have to go tell everyone!
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's small enough that everyone knows everyone, because I wouldn't say it's more than, like, I feel like it's around 300 people, because...
That's what I was thinking.
Because I remember there being, like, a repeated, like...
Thing as, with the grounders that Clark killed, and...
As many times as they pull the lever, there's also, like... As many times as Clark killing 300 people over and over. Does that ring a bell?
Yes. I was going to say 300 as well. And I wasn't sure if that was because that's the amount of grounders that Clark killed at the end of... Or no. Yeah. Wait. That's not how... Sorry. The amount of grounders that Bellamy kills in season 3.
Uh-huh. Because I feel like it's a...
Is 300 as well. So I...
That was a parallel because they are similar amounts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, like, definitely small enough for everybody to know everybody else.
Yeah, exactly.
And I feel like that's another thing, is that it's just like, you know, Monty going in at the end and is like, hello, I am a complete NPC decontamination person. Like, they should be like, what, Jimmy, is that you? Like, they know everybody.
Right,
you
exactly,
know? Like, they
yeah.
should be like, who's under there?
Right.
Yeah. But so everyone but Monty makes it back to the dorm, and Miller's like, did we find the radio? And, or like, maybe he went to go find the radio or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Jasper's like, no, where's Monty? Miller's like, not with you. Then we go and we see him pretending to do the decontamination to get into the control room. The guard is like, what the heck? You were just here yesterday. And Monty's like, routine follow-up. I'll go fast. Like, if I worked in the command center and I knew there was no routine follow-up any other time ever, I'd be like, I don't know about that, but either way it works, so yay him. I do think it's funny, and maybe, no, because then they start talking to Bellamy on the radio after this, so it's not like they, like, catch Monty and then go in and are like, what did he change? Like, they were like, oh, right. Well, I can't tell, don't have any internet history to, like, see what this guy was doing, and they just, like, leave it alone, I guess, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, we leave and come back, Monty's still working in the room, and he un-jams the frequency, but then Cage and Emerson are walking toward the room, and Cage says, are you sure they went to the village together, talking about Clark and Lexa? Emerson says, yeah, we need more people outside, and I'm like, oh boy, whoever will they send outside? Probably you, Emerson.
Probably this guy who's been outside.
Probably the dude who's calling for more people outside. They're like, cool, you just volunteered.
Yeah.
So the guard that's outside the room that Monty, like, kicked out, they're like, why aren't you in there? And he's like, oh, routine decon. And then Monty walks out and is like, I'm all done. They're already suspicious. So Emerson checks the log, says that he forgot to log it. So Monty, like, turns back because it would be more suspicious for him to just keep walking. And I was looking at the, like, logs and everything, and he just writes exactly what the last one says.
Uh-huh.
And the last number, it's the same number, and then the last number is either 77 or 76. So it was basically just 50-50 for him choosing which one.
Right.
But one of the logs does say 78. No idea what that means.
Huh.
I thought it was, like, clear and unclear. Not sure what 78 means. Either way, he writes 77, because that's just what the last person said.
Right.
And he goes, you said it was clear, like, you didn't write that. Monty says, oh, weird, okay, I'll come back, I'll fix it later, and he runs, but, you know, obviously he gets caught.
Yeah, poor kid.
Can I just say, bonk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bummer for him. Monty wakes up in a cage, Harper is there, and they have 47 cages, one for each of them.
Oof.
Great. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Do not love that for them. So that's the Mount Weather storyline, you guys. Really quick before Sam does her summary for the not Mount Weather storyline, I'm going to talk to you guys about Patreon. It's a service in which you can donate to some of your favorite creators. Our Patreon is patreon.com/theafficionados, and we'd really appreciate your help if you have the means to do so. We have several very cool tiers that you can join there. It's a monthly donation of $1 or more. $1 gets you early access to every single podcast, and then it just goes up and you get more cool things from there. A whole week in advance you get it, and if not, you can check out some of our small businesses, which are in the description, or you can recommend us to a friend, because that's free, and word of mouth is also really, really helpful, so we really appreciate you guys, and thanks.
Yeah.
I need a sip of my cocoa moon. Delicious. Now Sam is going to talk about what happens not in Mount Weather.
I sure am. All right.
Oh boy.
I tried not to make it terribly long this time, and it's broken up pretty good. Okay. So I think we're doing good, okay. But it is longer than the other storyline by nature. So
right, of course.
So Clark is having a cheeky Macbeth-inspired minty bee after she kills Finn, and Kane and Abby come in to check on her, but then Lexa is like, hey, I'm ready to negotiate. And the commander knows that everyone is not happy about the outcome, but Lexa's like, I've been there, so it's fine. She lays out the plan for everyone to go cook Finn at Tondisi. And Kane is like, hey, no, we should bury him. And Indra's like, absolutely not, he was a murderer. And then they start bickering. And it's kind of crazy that all the grown adults are fighting. And the Chosen One teens are like, anyway. So Clark is like, hey, yeah, sure, let's go have a bonfire so we can actually focus on Mount Weather. And Lexa's like, we want the same things. They are leaving ASAP, so Clark has to go pick her squad, and Kane and Abby realize that they're both out of their depth, and as much as Abby wants to help Clark, Kane knows that she and Lexa are actually the ones that are in charge now. Clark goes to apologize to Raven, who is mourning over Finn's body. Clark asks her to stay behind and work on the radio, but Raven's like, absolutely not, I'm going wherever you take his body. Even if she has to work on the way there, she's decided she's going. Raven storms off, and Clark hallucinates Finn's creepy-ass eyeball staring at her from his corpse.
Oh my god, so stupid.
It's so bad. Elsewhere, on the road the next day, Bellamy and Clark are kind of bickering about what the best way to get their people out of Mount Weather is. He thinks that they're wasting time with this and wants to just sneak in and get people out, but she says she can't lose him too. Paralleling this, Lexa and her guard Gustus are bickering about what's good for the coalition, but Lexa is determined to make it work, and she's like, I'm in charge. Hush. And it's a sweet moment. They set up camp for the night halfway there, and Kane sits down next to Abby, and they discuss what to do about Jaha, and I hyperanalyze every single thing about how close they're sitting and where their hands are when they're out of frame. Abby is still worried about Clark, and Kane promises that she'll be okay. Across the way, Indra says some kind of grounder slur to Lincoln, and he explains that it means traitor to Octavia. Mm-hmm. Because people still think he's part Reaper, they're afraid of him. Octavia tries to comfort him, and they actually just start going at it out in the open.
In front of everyone!
In front of everyone! Yeah.
There's so many people there. Humiliating.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Clark is fully hallucinating Finn, spooning her. This is so weird. Why did we do it?
Oh, boy.
The next day, they arrive at Tondisi and have to give up all their weapons before going in. Raven has, like, 36 weapons, and she is not happy about giving them up. Everyone walks in kind of, like, paired up, and once again, I am hyper-fixating on Kane and Abby. Because in the background, when the locals are like, Ayo, Sky Crew, Kane is doing this whole, like, boyfriend move of, like, putting himself between Abby and the crowd, and it's just, it's a really unhinged thing to witness at this stage of their relationship, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
Anyway, a skirmish occurs when some guy is like, we don't want this, and we don't want these people here, and Lex is like, okay, beat this guy up, because she wants to protect her alliance, and Lexa says that anyone who harms Sky Crew will be killed, and Bellamy's like, yeesh.
Yeesh.
Then, yeah. They get the Finn bonfire set up, the bon finner, if you will. I don't know why I wrote that.
and I will.
Boo!
Yeah. Brittany is also in the room, by the way.
I'm texting her. I need new headphones. I had to send her a picture of the new headphones I'm going to buy.
Lexa gives a speech about cleansing the pain of the past or whatever, and Lincoln translates it for the people who don't speak Tree Crew. Before Lexa lights it, though, she hands the torch to Clark and has her do it. Clark, once again, is hallucinating Finn, and he, like, his hand guides hers to burn his body or whatever.
Oh, it's so weird.
Yeah. And as she does it, she says, your fight is over in grounder language, as a sign of their, like, blending cultures or whatever. After the crowd is dissipated, Clark and Lexa are still standing there, and Lexa reveals her past with Kostya, her former lover who was captured and murdered by the Ice Nation. She reveals that she got over the pain by realizing that love was a weakness and shut herself off from it. This won't come back to bite her later at all.
At all.
Clark says that she could never do that. Spoilers, she does later this episode, and then also in season 7. That's crazy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Lexa is like, you put people in danger if you don't become a stone cold baddie. Inside, Kane offers a bottle of moonshine to the Grounders as a gift, and they like share a little respectful moment. Lexa prepares a toast with Clark, but first Gus is like, let me make sure it's not poisoned. And then while Lexa is toasting to everybody that they hope to find, Gus is like, hang on, it is poisoned. And then everyone is confused because no, it wasn't.
Wait a second.
But Bellamy knocks the cup out of Clark's hands just in case. Chaos breaks out and I get more background crumbs because Kane is fully just like using his entire body to protect Abby again. And Bellamy is also doing that with Clark and Raven. Lexa is like, be for fucking real, you want me dead. And Gustus finds a poison vial on Raven that isn't actually hers, and they lock all the Sky People in a dungeon, and Lincoln tries to, like, argue for them to get out, but Indra's like, you're one of them now, loser. In the background, Kane and Abby try to scheme their way out of this whole mess, while Clark is like, okay, Raven, be honest, did you do crimes? And Raven is like,
oh.
Rightfully, bro, you just murdered my boyfriend. She hits Clark in the face, and Clark's hallucinations get worse. She starts talking to Finn's ghost, and everyone is like, maybe she's not okay.
Oh. Yeah, everyone looks at her with the most pitying, like, look, and it's rough.
Yeah. After a commercial break, Abby goes to comfort Clark and is like, hey, I get it. I kind of did the same thing with your dad, but loving someone else will make it better. Clark is like, hey, I'm still better than you, actually. I did it to protect people. And Abby's like, so did I.
Same, dude.
And then Clark's like, damn, I've become my mom. Derogatory.
Clark in that scene is literally like, screw you, mom. We are not the same. Oh my God, we're the same.
Exactly.
I'm like, okay, when did that flip happen?
The math was not mathing.
Yeah.
Later, Kane is like, hey, go easy on your mom. Diplomat to diplomat, and definitely not as your new dad. Here's some advice. Let's figure out.
Please be nice to your mom. She's really pretty, and I can't stand to watch her cry.
Exactly. He suggests to Clark that they figure out who's actually trying to hurt Lexa so that they can save themselves, because they all know it wasn't them. Lincoln reveals that actually a lot of people want Lexa dead because no one's happy with this alliance. Indra comes back and is like, hey, give us Raven. I wanted all of you to die, but Lexa says we can only do one murder today. However, if you're still here by the time she's dead, I will hunt you.
Mm-hmm.
Outside, they string up Raven and start doing what they were gonna do to Finn. Bellamy tries to stop it, but Kane stops him, and everyone is like, well, I guess we should leave, actually, which is, like, so weird. But back in the dungeon, Clark is trying to figure out what the missing piece is, and Ghost Finn makes her realize that it wasn't in the bottle. She proves it wasn't Raven by drinking directly from the moonshine bottle, and Bellamy does some girl math in the background and realizes that it was Gustus who set up the whole poison thing because he wanted to bring down the Alliance. Lexa has no choice but to stick by her edict that anyone who threatened her alliance and Sky Crew would be put to death, and they string him up in Raven's place. Abby stitches up Raven's wounds while Tree Crew takes their cuts out on Gustus. Raven realizes what Clark saved Finn from and sort of forgives her for what she did. Then Lexa delivers the final blow by stabbing her sword through Gustus's heart. Abby realizes that they're not so different from the Grounders after all.
I think it's funny. I think it's funny that Raven is like, sees Gustus being like murdered and is like, oh my God, this is what Finn got.
Like, girl, it was
saved from. I was like, bro, you were just tied to that.
I know.
You didn't have this revelation before?
I'm like, what, is it because she was in shock? I don't know. Who knows?
I don't know. Anyway.
Later that night, Bellamy explains that he knew it was Gustus because he would do anything to protect Lexa. Raven picks up Monty's message on the radio, and Clark tells Bellamy he was right and he should totally go be their inside man. And Bellamy's like, I thought you couldn't live without me. And Clark is like, never mind, I was being weak. Get out of here. To atone for his,
never mind, I don't care,
heavily in quotes, sins, Lincoln says that he'll take Bellamy back into the mountain because he's been there before. He insists that Octavia stay because she is crucial to making the Alliance work. Clark is still being stalked by that ugly ass ghost, and she tells him to leave because love is weakness, and he walks into the dark, kicking off one of the show's worst mantras.
Oh my God. I mean, yeah, that's what happened.
Abby tries to give Clark some of Finn's ashes in case she wants to mourn him. But Clark's like, pass, I've already gotten over it.
Clark knocks it out of her hand.
I know. And I'm like,
blows a raspberry in her face.
And I'm like, maybe give it to Raven? I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Clark walks into the dungeon and war planning continues, and then the episode's over.
Yeah. Okay, so Clark is crying in Lex's tent, covered in blood. Abby and Kane pull up. Please let me know where all of your crumbs are. Like, please, like, feel free to interrupt me to talk about your crumbs. Because I'm just like, Abby and Kane walk into a room, and you're probably just like, Abby and Kane sexily walk in and stare lovingly in each other's eyes. And I'm like, I listen, sure, if you say so. So you just let me know.
All right.
Okay, so Abby and Kane show up. Clark's freaking out, and she's like, I had to do it, and, you know, I understand, like, why she would be freaking out about
that. Yeah, 100%.
Gustus shows up and says, hey, Lexa's ready to talk to you. Clark immediately pulls it together, and Lexa and Indra come in. Lexa says, okay, so as far as I'm concerned, we're good. Some people are mad and say it wasn't enough. Looks over at Indra. But your suffering is going to haunt you for the rest of your life. So I feel like we're good. But the body still has to go to Tondisi.
Yeah.
Kane says, no, please let him be buried by his own people. And Indra's like, as if. We were owed 18 deaths and we got one. So at least give us this, basically.
And, like, it's very, like, back and forthy. But I'm like, how have we not realized that none of you are in charge here?
Right, exactly. And I like that Indra says, my village. And I think we did know that Indra was from Tondisi. But it's interesting how many characters are from Tondisi. Like, it seems like a really small village. But, like, it's really giving, like, famous people I went to high school with. Like, Lexa's from Tondisi. Is she Lexa? I think.
Yes, she is.
Lexa's from Tondisi. Indra's from Tondisi. Lincoln's from Tondisi. Like, why Tondisi so special?
I think...
you know?
I do think that it's because... I think that it's bigger than what we see. You know what I mean? Because...
gotta be, yeah.
Washington, D.C., which is where they get the name from, right. Obviously.
Yeah.
Is mass... Like, in terms of the spread of it, pretty big compared to what is actually on screen.
In which case, village is not the word.
So it would stretch, I would say, at least... I don't know. I said that like I was going to have a number. But I think it would be pretty large and basically...
Sam's like, I'm a cartographer and I know how...
I would say, like, basically most of the land that we've seen, if it has any kind of, like, visible city structure that was once there, like, when we pass the Lincoln Memorial and, like, the bunker that Bellamy and Clark go to, I would say all of those places are included in Tondisi.
Oh, okay, sure.
You know what I mean? And they're just, like, at, like, city council or whatever. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Abby is like, you don't want justice, you want vengeance, and Indra's like, yeah, and you're not ready for it. And, you know, that reminds me of, like, courage isn't justice from last episode. Like,
yeah.
You don't even want justice. You want vengeance. So Clark is like, fine. But then we talk about how to save everyone from Mount Weather. Lex is like, yep, we're on the same side. You know, we're leaving now. So choose who you're bringing. And Abby's like, we don't have to just give him over. Like, if you want, we can keep arguing for this. And Clark says, you know, we have to do this or else I killed Finn for nothing. Like, if we keep fighting about it, then what was the point?
Exactly. It has to mean something.
Yeah. So Clark and Lexa leave, and we have a cabbie scene. Kane agrees with Clark. Abby says, you know, these people don't even know what peace is. Kane says that actually Lexa does know what peace is.
Yeah.
Abby says they're being led by a child, and Kane goes, I have bad news. We are also being led by a child. And I think that's funny that we're, like, dragging the chancellor being like, dude, I'm sorry, you're not even the chancellor at this point. Your daughter's the chancellor.
Yeah. I do genuinely appreciate the like, growth from Kane and, like, seeing him understand Lexa's perspective and, like, have a genuine respect for her after, like, the way he met her.
Yeah.
I do also hate that in the process of giving him that growth and intelligence, we have to give Abby the, like, mother idiot ball override because, she's not thinking with her politician brain. She's thinking with her mom brain, and somehow her mom brain makes her stupid, which I think is dumb as far as writing choices.
Yeah, I think, and not to spoil, because it's quite a big moment in season 4 of Lost, but there's this character who, like, has been alone and so good at survival for, like, years and years and years and years. And then as soon as she, like, finds her daughter again, they, like, kill her off.
Yeah.
And it's like, why should motherhood make her weak?
Exactly.
Or stupid? like, why would that not make her stronger? So that's definitely a complaint that I have about both of those shows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Clark approaches Raven, crying over Finn's body. Raven screams at Clark to leave, and Clark reminds her to work on the radio while she's gone. Ugh, it's not now. Not good timing.
Clark, tell me you can't read social cues without telling me you can't read social cues.
Like, I understand that, like, you're leaving and you don't have time to be, like, mindful of Raven's feelings, but there's a nicer way we could have done it.
Yeah.
Like, Clark actively mean to Raven
this episode.
I see Clark's perspective, but I'm like, come on, we got to just think about it for 3 more seconds, please.
Like, I completely understand why Clark is in the absolutely messy state that she's in, but it's also, like, it's just hard to watch her talk to, like, bro, it's Raven. You stole her boyfriend, and then you killed her boyfriend. Like,
Oh man.
Some empathy would be a good idea right now.
Like, even a better idea would be to tell somebody else to remind her, like, 2 days from now, or, like, tomorrow, or something, you know? Like, it does not need to come from you, dude. It does not need to come from you.
No.
Yeah. So the Grounders come and try to take the body, and Raven freaks out. Raven can't believe that Clark has agreed to this. Clark says, it's a death ritual. We're only doing it to, like, save our people, basically.
Yeah.
Raven says she's coming with, and she's gonna bring the stupid radio so she can, like, work on it. Because apparently that's all you care about, Clark, is the radio. And then, in our first creepy hallucination of the episode, Clark creepily hallucinates that Finn's eyes open and look at her. Horrible.
It's
horrible. Honestly, if it had just been this, I would have been like, that's enough. Like, I understand that it's haunting her, but they said it's not enough. Oh boy.
Actually, you paid Thomas McDonald for this. You paid him to do this.
Yeah.
You spent money.
No lines.
To have this actor come stand here and just stare at her like a freak. Get out of here.
Okay. So they're walking to Tondisi. Clark continues to see Finn just, like, creepily standing and staring at her in the woods. And they have this, like, zoom in on him. It's so funny. It's so ridiculous. I'm just like, what is this supposed to make me feel, like, sad that Finn is gone? Like, it's really dumb. It's really dumb.
It's bad.
Yeah.
It's supposed to show you that Clark is mentally unstable.
Correct. But, and, like, to be fair, and, like, I know that we're, like, very, like, we did not care for, it's no secret that we did not care for the way that the 100 ended and, you know, what, especially the last two seasons were like. But, like, even at its height, like, this was the first episode that I watched live.
Mm.
And I'm pretty sure I thought it was dumb then as well. Like, even when I loved the 100 and it was one of my favorite shows, I still was like, this is stupid.
I was so ready to see Finn go. So to see him literally pop up.
Right.
In the next episode, I was like, get out of here. Why are you
You're dead. Go home.
Still here.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So Bellamy asks if she's okay and tells her that she did the right thing. And Clark is like, yep. And, you know, I have to live with it. Super easy scene for Paige and Ian just walking in the back. And, you know, Marie and Ricky, do you have thoughts on what they're talking about back there?
I don't, actually. I probably did at one time have deeper thoughts about, like, this particular set of background stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one where I'm like, they're just vibing. It's all chill.
They just vibe.
Yeah.
Love that for them. So Clark and Bellamy continue their conversation. Clark says, do you still think the truce is a bad idea? Bellamy says that they're wasting their time while their friends are in trouble. Clark says that we need their army or else we won't be able to do it. Like, we're not going to have enough manpower, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Bellamy says, you know, the army that we're going for hasn't beaten the Mountain Men this entire time.
Right.
Like, in what world are they supposed to do that now? Now that they, like, have guns from us? Like, Bellamy doesn't think that both of their armies put together even is enough, necessarily.
Yeah. I think he has a point, honestly. Like, I do think that his plan to get inside is gonna be, would be swifter.
Yeah.
But also, Clark is not wrong in that they need an ally.
Yeah, right, true.
Because you can't just be,
like,
the third person in a war.
We definitely can't do it by ourselves.
Because if you're just, they're both bigger than you. So,
exactly.
You have to ally yourself with one of them, and this is the least bad right now.
Yeah. So, Bellamy's like, we need an inside man. And Clark says, no, it's too dangerous. You know what, you guys? I should have put this together while we were recording, but I just realized Emerson is like, we need an outside man, and Bellamy is like, we need an inside man, and they just do it. They just switch. And yeah, I should have pointed it out in the episode that, like, they're basically saying the opposite thing, and just it's an interesting parallel.
Bellamy's like, you know, you made it out, so, like, I can definitely make it in. Clark is like, absolutely not, like, putting her foot down. Bellamy's like, well, unfortunately, I don't take orders from you, so you're gonna need to give me a better reason so that I also think that it's a bad idea.
Uh-huh.
And Clark says, I can't lose you, too.
This is a good episode for the Bellamy Clark.
Guys, the Bellarks.
Yeah.
The Bellarks had a point.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing, is that they had points. They had very good evidence. That's why it, like,
straight up
stings so bad that, like, nothing ever happened.
Until season three, I could fully see either direction. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah.
Like, everyone had their points. And, like, mm-hmm. until we get into the middle of season three, I could have seen it going either way. But then things happened.
And even, like, I mean, and we had, like, all of the Lexa stuff, and it's like, okay, like, if I was a Bellark at the time, which I probably was, to be honest, if I was a Bellark at the time, I would have been like, okay, that's fine, like, we're playing the long game.
Yeah, exactly.
No worries. Like, it was so out of the realm of possibility that they just wouldn't do Bellark because they put so much into it.
Right.
So it's like, I wouldn't even have been worried. I would have been like, Kate, no worries. It's a slow burn.
Exactly.
Mac up on your girl. No problem.
It's very much.
Don't worry about it. You know? And it's like, uh-huh. Yeah.
It's extremely it's such a clear case of we made this so, like, they make it so obvious and, like, they plant all the seeds. Yeah. And then they got mad at everyone for planting this, like, for media literacy. Like, I don't...
Right.
Why did you get mad at your audience for understanding the show you were writing? Why were you writing it then?
Yeah, no, literally. Like, they literally, like you said, they planted the seeds, and then the seeds grew, and then they got mad at us for, like, taking the fruit off the trees, or, like, right. Taking the vegetables out of the whatever. Like, what? Okay. We were just supposed to let it stay there and rot? What do you want?
Sorry. Exactly. Brittany has something that she would like to add as well.
Yes, please. Okay. Please.
Can I just say that the reason they got mad at their audience is twofold. One, because their audience wanted romance, which leads directly into two, their audience was comprised of mostly women.
Mm-hmm.
And then that argument is twofold, mm-hmm. which is one, hysterical women wanting romance is icky, icky, icky. And two, Jason Rothenberg specifically was absolutely infuriated that women were his core audience and were smarter than him, figuring out what he was going to do and criticizing him for it. And then just absolutely also furious that the established text that he was interpreting did something that he didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, all these women just want this, so I'm going to go left instead of right. And at the time, people thought it was genius. And now I'm sitting here and I'm like, the fact that Clexa happened is an accidental... That was an accident.
Yeah.
Like, that's the crazy part. Is like, he punished those women because he hated that his audience was comprised of basically teenage and 20-something women.
It always comes back to misogyny. And I'm like, always. My brother in Christ, you're writing on the CW.
Exactly.
Who the fuck do you think watches the CW?
Right, exactly. And it's also just like, oh, sorry, I don't want to, like, he's like, what? Who's watching my show that has strong female main character and all of the men in it are hot? Why?
A strong female main character who is also only 17.
Right.
Like,
in what world do women not want to watch that? He's just like, right. But there's violence. Women don't want to watch violence. Where are all my men who want to see the strong female characters and hot dudes?
Yeah. And
not that there aren't men. Obviously there are. But like,
uh-huh.
I just think that's ridiculous.
Exactly. And just like, the man thought he was writing for HBO when he was writing for the CW. Like, you're not cooking what you think you are. Let me enjoy the dish and just walk away.
Right, exactly. The cook doesn't care who's buying the dish. They just care they're getting the money. Are you stupid?
Right.
Okay.
Stop telling me how to enjoy the food.
Exactly. if I want to put ketchup on the macaroni and cheese, that's my prerogative now that I have it. And that's my metaphor. That's my analogy for fan fiction.
Exactly. It's perfect. I love it.
I'm putting ketchup on the mac and cheese. And now that it's in front of me, I can do whatever I want with it, bud.
Exactly.
I'm paying for it. Okay, so basically in this, like, parade of people.
What you intended does not matter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So basically, like, you know, a few sort of caravans up, Lexa and Gustus are talking in Trig. Lexa says, "Kate, calm down. Like, you know, all alliances are risky." And Gustus says, "You know, I was talking about, like, the alliances we were having with the different clans, not, like, the sky people. Like, they're basically like the mountain men. Like, you're trying to kill the coalition. Mm-hmm. And Lexa's like, "Are you worried about the coalition dying, or are you worrying about me dying?" Gustus says, "She is the coalition." She says, "Okay, then protect me."
Yeah. Like, she, I love how, like, confident Lexa is about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also feel like Gustus feels very much like a brother to her, to me.
Mm.
Like an older brother figure.
That's why I think that Alicia's a standout for me this episode. I mm-hmm. think that her performance is just really, really good. And I'll talk about that a little bit more later of, like, my favorite Lexa moment.
Yeah.
In this episode. But I think that she's just awesome.
I agree.
I think that she does such a good job of, like, being this person with authority, mm-hmm. especially when she's so much more petite, smaller, shorter than all of these other people that she's surrounded by. She mm-hmm. still is able to command the attention and the respect of everyone. Like, I just think that Alicia's awesome.
Yeah. She carries the appropriate amount of, like, gravitas with it to, like, give it mm-hmm. the weight that it needs to make you yeah. believe that these people would all follow her around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. The way I totally forgot that con getta actually means coalition, like, in Trig, and isn't just the word con plus getta.
Oh, yeah.
Like, con getta, if you guys don't know, is a convention of the 100 convention that happened maybe a couple times. I don't remember. I never got a chance to go.
Wasn't it Conageddon?
But, like, oh, you're right. It was Conageddon. Why wasn't it con getta?
Because people are stupid.
That's an actual word in Trig. I you're completely right. It's they did convention and Armageddon, didn't they?
Which makes no sense.
But con getta. Con getta is an actual word in Trig.
Yeah.
Oops. Okay, never mind. Forget it. So 10 miles from the village, they decide to camp for the night. And Clark is sort of, like, sleeping or, like, setting up to sleep, like, closer to the grounders. And Bellamy wants Clark to come, like, sleep over by everyone else. But Clark is like, "Nope, we have to show that we trust them." So she's going to sleep, like, over the line, basically.
Mm-hmm.
More cabbie content. So Kane says, "Hey, I don't know if this is the time to bring it up, but we can't really keep Jaha locked up forever." And Abby's like, "Oh, you're right. Maybe I should just, like, shock lash him in front of everyone."
Uh-huh.
To make a scene and to make a statement. What do you think about that? And Kane is like,
"Touché.
Seems fine to me." He's like, I was thinking, how about a pardon? And Abby thinks about it. She looks over at Clark, and Kane reads her mind and says, you know, Clark's going to be okay. But, you know, she just watched her daughter commit murder. So she's like, yeah. I'm thinking about a lot of things right now.
This is one of the moments where I do get crumbs. I think mm-hmm. that this is, I love that Abby is at this point able to joke about the shock lash thing. Because that is such
right.
a fucked up thing that he did to her.
Super traumatic. Yeah.
Yeah. But I like that whatever he's shown her in, like, the way he's changed since he came back, it makes it safe enough to joke about now.
Mm-hmm.
And then also in this scene, another crumb is I analyzed it so much because I am certain that out of frame, he puts his hand on her leg after he tells her Clark will be okay. Because of the, like, way that they move within the frame and the way that she looks at him after. So just go rewatch that with that.
Catch me going back to rewatch that part after this is over.
Heck yeah.
Love it. So Lincoln's just walking around vibing, and Indra, like, spits an insult at him in Trig. Lincoln explains that she called him a traitor and, you know, says to Octavia that, you know, they think I'm still kind of, like, reapery. And Octavia is like, "Do you want to talk about it?" And Lincoln is like, "Extremely no. You know, I don't want to talk about it." And Octavia says, "You know, you're not the monster that you were when you were a Reaper." And Lincoln basically says, "Hope not." And they kiss about it. And it gets real spicy. And you're like, guys, you're making out in front of everyone. Like, there are people around.
Right. And, like, I respect them. And I'm also like,
like, a lot of people.
Girl, what?
Like, there's one thing to, like, kiss. But, like, she gets, like, on top of him and stuff. Like, I'd be like, whoa, hello?
And I'm like, there are tents around. Like, you're not obligated. You could have just...
Go in a tent or something.
You could have just, like, taken him to a tent. I don't... it's a choice.
Sure.
It's a choice. Who directed this episode?
I know that I've... we can look it up.
I'm gonna look it up.
Oh, don't blame the director.
Okay, sure.
It's not writing. She straddled him.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you got me there.
Sometimes I think about these scripts and they're just like, Octavia gets on top and she, what, like, what does it say?
Like, was that scripted? I need to know.
Right.
Who am I supposed to be mad at?
I know that I've said this before. I know I've said this before on here, and I'm really interested to talk more about this when we eventually get to season one, but, like, when Octavia and Lincoln are already sort of, what's the word, already, like, together, like, I'm thinking of the word, I, like, have half of it. Anyway, like, they're basically already together, you know, they're already, you know, it's all happened already. It's like, okay, that's Octavia and Lincoln. But I'm really interested to talk a little bit more in season one about how it feels. Established! Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
You're an angel. Established was exactly the word I was looking for. But in season one, you know, we get the sort of idea, like, Octavia, they make her so young seeming. And I know that Marie was already, like, in her 30s, which is crazy because she looks so young. Like, you know, I think she's, like, 12 or 14 in the books. You know, like,
yeah.
I think she's supposed to be, like, at, like, 16 or something. Lincoln is, like, in his late 20s.
Yeah, for sure.
Or at least that's what he looks like, you know? Like, it's a little problematic, but, like, once they're already established, you're like, okay, it's Octavia and Lincoln. But, like, when it first starts, like, it's a little bit, like, honestly, a little Stockholm Syndrome Beauty and the Beast-esque.
No, that's totally,
you know?
That's totally a valid critique of it. I do think that, like, the intention of it, because of how close in age I think Ricky and Marie are.
Yeah.
I think the intention was for him to be, like, 18. But, like, that's a grown man. You know what I mean?
Ricky looks old. Like, Ricky is...
He's
so old looking.
He's just... He's so tall and so ripped. And it's, like...
Wide.
That's a grown man. Like, I...
And he grows a full beard when he's a rebirth. A full beard.
Bellamy is only believable as a, like, teen young adult because Bob is short. So...
Right, sure.
You know what I mean? Like...
Yeah, of course. And he's not as broad, you know? Like, yeah, that makes total sense. Did you look up who directed the episode?
Yeah, it's someone I've never heard of. He did, however, direct an episode of Person of Interest.
Oh, there you go. Was that also a weird one?
Let me see.
Paige was also in that one.
He's like, don't give me a script that's not weird. I have to have scripts that are weird.
I think it was not a weird episode, because it was one that Paige was in, actually, so.
Oh, great. There you go.
I wonder if that's the...
He's like, I'll only work with Paige.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clark wakes up and Finn is behind her spooning her. This is the most, that's one of the most insane things the show ever did, and they turned everyone into glowing trees.
Yeah, honestly.
They turned everyone into glowing trees, and this is the weirdest thing.
Yeah, and you're right.
Ghost Finn spooning Clark from behind.
Yeah, the most.
What?
A list of the most cringe moments, and this, you're correct, this is number one.
I literally, I think I burst into laughter several times rewatching yesterday. I was just like, I can't believe that this aired.
I rewatched, I was just like, be.
And it's all about Finn.
Be so for real. It's awful. Yeah.
And, like, I think I like most of the things about this storyline. It's really just the Finn stuff is so cringy.
I love most of this storyline as well, but the cringe.
Yeah.
The Finn stuff, like, takes you out of it, because, like, I'm supposed to be taking you seriously, and I can't when that man is just standing there with his eyeballs open.
Yeah. So, in the morning, they've already, like, gotten up and everything, and they approach Tondisi. Lexa explains... Oh, no, sorry, I think it's Lincoln. Lincoln explains that they need to lay down their weapons. Sorry, I have... L could equal Lincoln or Lexa, who knows? Lincoln explains that they need to lay down their weapons before they enter, so they all put their weapons in, like, a bin. And Gustus disarms Raven for her because she, like, is basically, like, take it off me. Like, she's, like, the personification of the phrase, make me, right now.
Uh-huh.
And so that's basically what's going on. But where in this time he plants the poison on her, I do not know.
Right?
I watched very closely yesterday. And I have no idea when that might have happened.
Yeah, I can't clock it. And honestly, until you said that, I don't think that I realized that that's what happened.
That's the moment. Yeah.
Because I just sort of assumed that he just, like, slipped it out of his sleeve while he was, like, roughing her up. But it totally makes sense that he would plant it on her.
Well, because the thing is that, like, later, after he, like, he's not the one who finds the poison on her because he's, like, currently, like, I'm dying, I'm poisoned.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, some other guard who grabs it off her. So, yeah. And then I think she, like, it's either her or Bellamy or something that's like, he's the one who searched me, or like, whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Bellamy does.
So I think it's supposed to have happened.
Bellamy does his real math.
Yeah, it's supposed to have happened in this scene, but I could not clock where that might have happened.
Yeah.
So Gustus clears them, and as they're walking in, Grounders are shouting at them. They say, you know, the Sky People took everything from them. It's this man who lost his wife and child and is like, you're not welcome here. Lexa tells Gustus to attack the man, like, as an example, but then Clark shows up and she asks Lexa to tell him to stop because they're going to be blamed for it. Like, the Sky People are going to get blamed again.
Mm-hmm.
Lexa tells Gustus to let him live and tells everyone the Sky People are with us now, and if you disagree, you can die. And Bellamy's like, great.
Yeah.
Bellamy's like, and that's a lovely message to send. Perfect. We look so good.
For sure, for sure.
Awesome.
He's like, definitely, they're gonna like us now, for sure.
Yeah, and now we're best friends.
Exactly. This is another moment where I do get crumbs in the background.
Ooh, tell me more.
So when they're walking in and, like, the Grounders are sort of, like, they've walked in where there's people now and the Grounders are all sort of like, boo, you suck, get out of here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Abby is, like, on the edge that's, like, closer to people, I guess. And Kane, like, takes her by the shoulders and moves her away from the people who are yelling and screaming, which I always thought was such a, like, romantic gesture, in my opinion, because it's, like...
He knows which side of the sidewalk he's supposed to walk on.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's such a strange show of, like, intimacy and, like, knowledge of an intent to protect.
Yeah.
And that I always really like. That's, like, it's very, like, romance novel-y, like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that. Yes.
Yeah. And then, like, throughout the background of that scene, he's sort of, like, still got his hands on her shoulders. I remember gifing.
We love that for them.
Gifing, like, blurry little frames of both those moments.
Yeah. So at the funeral ritual, there's, like, lots of bodies on the pyre. So clearly it's, like, all the people who died, they had, like, saved their bodies for this. And then they put Finn on top, basically.
I also didn't clock that. That's interesting. I wondered why it was so tall.
I think that's what's going on. Yeah. So in Lexa says, in fire we cleanse the pain of the past. And this sort of reminds me of what they said on Luna's rig, like in water, I can't remember exactly what it is, but like
yeah.
That just reminded me of that. And Lincoln is translating for Sky Crew. Lexa gives the torch to Clark to do the ritual. And it's like sort of it's almost like a test, I feel like, to see, like, do you actually mean what you say?
Uh-huh.
And Clark is having a hard time. She can't do it. But then Finn's creepy ass grabs her hand and helps her do it.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. I think I would hate it either way, but, like, I think I would hate it less if he stopped looking at her with that specific look.
I think I would hate it less if I just...
I'm just like, why does he seem so mad? Like, why does he seem pissed off? And she's like, leave me alone. Why? Like, I had to do it. I had to. I'm like, he literally said, thank you for saving my life.
Right.
Or, like, not thank you for saving my life, but thank you for ending it. Thank you for putting me out of my misery before I got tortured. Like, why does he seem so mad?
Well, I mean, he is a figment of Clark's imagination. So he... It's the, like...
Sure, right. He's her guilt.
Personification of her guilt. I think I would like it better if they stopped showing me his face. But just because I find that face so punchable.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, I mean, luckily they give us another shot to make it clear that, like, no one else can see him. Like, they have another shot of just her doing it, which I did appreciate that it's just, like, I mean, we already knew that Clark was the only one who could see him, but it's just nice to have that sort of establishing shot as well.
Yeah.
And Clark flexes her Trig knowledge and her Grounder culture knowledge and says, you gon' play Stay Odon, and Lexa's into it. Like, she's like, whoa. She's like, whoa.
She's very, it's another moment where she's impressed by Clark, and I think she's surprised that Clark keeps impressing her, because I don't think that anyone's probably impressed her in quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because she has, like, 13 brains in her head, so... It's hard to be impressed by someone who's, like, rarely do you meet someone who is as smart as you because you have the history of, like, 100 years in your brain.
Right. Yeah. Totally. And so, yeah, the grounders are all pretty impressed, and you just, like, oh, poor Raven. Like, I know those silent tears well. Like, the ones where you just, like, close your eyes and they just, like, fall down your cheek silently. Like, oh, I know that sadness.
Yeah.
I feel bad for her. So after it's all over, Clark is, like, looking at the ashes, and Lexa is standing with her, and she tells the story of Kostya, and it's so funny, like, how important this scene is to, like, Lexa's lore in general. Like, we talk about Kostya constantly, mm-hmm. and it's, like, we only talked about Kostya, like, this one time.
Well, no,
and then, like, maybe they brought it up at some point in season three, right?
They bring her up in season three.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, it's just, it's cool to, like, see the, like, rewatch mm-hmm. the Kostya scene
mm-hmm.
because I feel like I know so much about Kostya and I'm so familiar with this story that it's cool to see the first time where we heard about her.
Yeah. I also,
and, like, this was the confirmation that Lexa was into girls.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say, I love that mm-hmm. the way they introduce Lexa's sexuality like this being through, like, mm-hmm. a former love and not just, like, her hitting on Clark or something. Because it's a way to say it explicitly without being like, oh, look at our token lesbian. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, like, from Lexa's perspective, too, it's, like, sort of a way to not, I mean, you know, this conversation is important. Her telling this story is important for, like, you know, she has, like, a whole moral and stuff. But I also feel like it might give a sort of, it has, like, a secondary reason, which is that she's like, I just want to bring up to Clark with no pressure at all that I like girls.
Uh-huh.
Just saying. And if she likes girls now, she knows that information.
Exactly.
It's just out there now, you know?
Yeah.
But she says that Kostya was captured by the Ice Nation, and, you know, because they believed that she knew her secrets, because mm-hmm. we were a thing, they tortured her, killed her, and cut off her head. And I think in season three, they talked about it being sort of, like, delivered to her, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they,
And so Clark is like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, no, exactly. The Lexa gets mad at her new version of Gustus. Basically, mm-hmm. the bald guy who's like, please don't smash Clark.
Titus.
You're not allowed to smash Clark. Don't smash Clark. And Lexa's yeah, like, I know what happened last time. Don't talk to me about it. Mm-hmm. I hate you.
Right, right. Yeah. And so Clark is like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you ever get over the pain? And Lexa says, you know, I realized it was weakness. And yeah, I guess you brought up Titus, and I also brought up Titus in my notes, but, like, Titus watching from the background, just, like, pissed.
Uh-huh.
He's like, hate everything. And so Clark is like, are you kidding? Love is weakness? And she's like, yep. And Clark is like, so what, you just stop caring about everyone? You stop loving anything? And Lexa's like, yeah. And Clark's like, couldn't be me. Which is interesting because Lexa's like, yep, don't care about anybody. She so clearly cares about Gustus
uh-huh.
and loves Gustus.
Yeah.
And it's like she is proven right by her own mistakes
uh-huh.
in this episode. She's like, never care about anything. I loved Gustus and he betrayed me. I did it again.
Yep.
I freaking did it again. And it's like, it hurts. It's so sad for her.
Yeah.
I just think that this episode, actually, now that I think about it, mm-hmm. is, like, the first episode, at least for me, I'm trying to think of, like, previous episodes. I think that's true. That this is the first episode that, like, Lexa was, like, clear, like, not just a leader of the Grounders, but, like, she was so clear as, like, a person. Like, she was really humanized in this episode, I think.
We definitely get, like, this is the Lexa lore episode.
Yeah.
With the Kostya thing and, like, laying all that out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this definitely, like, gives her way more depth than she had up to this point.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So Clark is like, well, I could never do that. And Lexa's like, well, then the people you love are in danger. Because they can hurt them to hurt you. And that's foreshadowing that it hurts.
Mm-hmm. I also do think that the way that they do it sort of very clearly sets up Lexa as Clark's new, like, other romance. Because it up until now, it's been, oh, Finn or Bellamy. And now it's Bellamy or Lexa. Right. And it's a very, like,
mm-hmm.
1-2 of, like, swapping Finn out and being like, and anyway, yeah. Here's our new foil.
Youch. Immediately replaced.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But I also, like, you know, when she says, like, the people you love are in danger, you know, it's, like, painful foreshadowing. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, we see at the end of season three, you know, they literally, like, put Abby in danger to manipulate Clark.
Yep. And they literally, yeah, exactly. They, and it's mm-hmm. it's honestly what happens over and over to Clark
is just constantly having the people she loves used against her. Like, it's also, like, one of the biggest problems of the show, because when it takes that love is weakness part seriously, the characters suffer for it, because the people are supposed to realize... It's such a this-is-wrong way of thinking that is clearly wrong and should be subverted with the love-is-a-strength trope.
Right.
But unfortunately, the Hundred just keeps coming back to love-is-a-weakness and never really, like, landing on subverting it. And anytime you think that they are, they're like, actually, no, we're going to kill half of this relationship or half of this family or... And, like... make you realize, yeah, you're safer if you don't love someone. And it's just it's such a depressing message to send.
Right, like, the point is to, like, subvert that, and the point is to show that it's not true, but then they never get around to it.
Right, and, like, I'm not saying that all apocalypse media should be the same or interpret the apocalypse in the same way, but I will say that the best apocalypse media is the ones where people, like, build found families and establish that the reason that we keep going is because we care about each other. Like, look at The Last of Us. You know what I mean?
Oh my god, I was about to bring that up.
Like, yeah. The whole purpose, like, of...
shout out to the gay bottle episode.
Exactly. The whole purpose of continuing to live is because you care about someone. And, like, even, like, Joel and Ellie, like, spoilers for the finale, but, like, it's what you're willing to do to keep someone else safe is the whole reason for existing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Anyway. Yeah, for sure. And that's exactly. That's the whole point. Like, you know, you look at any piece of dystopian media and that's, like, sort of the idea is that, like, everything sucks, but love is what keeps us going.
Like, there's a whole...
And,
Yeah, exactly.
This show just never...
And, like, there's a whole, like, bummer. The Walking Dead gave off a whole spinoff just to have Rick and Michonne, like, find each other again, you know? The point...
Yeah, exactly. And, like, Katniss is able to make it through all three of the books because she loves PETA.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Love as a driving force for survival is way more interesting than shutting yourself off from it.
Totally. So that's when Lexa spits fire and says, and does the iconic quote of, "The dead are gone, Clark, the living are hungry." And I'm like, god damn, they had some bangers in season two. But I've been challenging myself to, like, look at these, like, really dope lines that we can tell are dope lines, but, like, what do they really mean? So I've been challenging myself to sort of, like, think about these lines that we know are cool and think about them as, like, what are they actually trying to say here? And so I think that "the dead are gone, the living are hungry" means that we have to prioritize helping and saving the people who are still around.
Yeah.
Because we can't do anything for the dead people anymore.
Exactly. And it's very much like, you can't mourn, like, don't mourn the dead, like, help.
Right, that's not going to do anything for them.
Exactly. There are people right in front of you who need you more.
When you mourn for someone, it has to be for you.
Yeah.
It's for you, it's not for them, because it's not going to change anything for them.
Yeah.
It can only change something for you.
I think it's funny that this line is in the same episode as "Is it big ass enough?" The duality of man.
Oh, man. Yeah, exactly. Is it big ass enough? Who knows? Yeah. So anyway, in the dining hall, Kane gives Lexa a bottle of liquor as a gift, and Lexa thanks him using his full name, which is Marcus of the Sky People. Mm-hmm. And Kane answers using her full name, Intrigue, which is sweet. And he says, just don't drink too much. Lexa asks Clark to drink with her, and Clark agrees. Gustus prepares the drink and wants to drink it first to make sure that it's chill. And it's not chill, spoiler alert. Lexa says, "We celebrate peace today, and tomorrow we plan for war." And they cheers to those that they've lost and those that they will find.
Before we
Gustus collapses. Yes, go on.
Before we get into the, like, chaos of that rest of that scene, I just do want to say that I really like the dynamic between Kane and Lexa. I think they understand each other in a way that's very much like, your brain works how my brain works as a leader. And I like that they sort of, like, see eye to eye with that. And, like, it's a very much a relationship that you could see, like in a modern AU, it would be, like, Kane is her father-in-law when she marries Clark, and they are the two that, like, grill out while, you know what I mean? it's that kind of, like,
totally
relation. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Gustus collapses because he was poisoned, and I can't remember if he was for real or if he's just acting. Like, it must be for real, right? Because Clark, like, looks in the cup, or... Does she even look in the cup?
I don't even know if she looks in the cup, but she just does the realization that it's not in the cup. I don't know if it's...
Yeah, exactly. And then she drinks the liquor.
Yeah. When I was rewatching, I thought he faked it.
Right, exactly. I think that the, like, canon that they're trying to tell us is that there was actual poison that he drank, uh-huh. but, like, ultimately, who's gonna drink it after you, Gustus? Right. Like, he could have just been faking it.
Yeah, exactly.
Ultimately. But he, like, drank poison for nothing. But if he is faking it, he's really milking it. He's uh-huh. like, I fall onto the table! I fall off the table! I'm dying! Like, you're like, okay, dude. Like,
excessively dramatic.
I don't know. Maybe he... Who knows if it's poison or if he just wasn't ready for the kickback of the alcohol, you know? Like, maybe he's just like, this stuff sucks. This tastes horrible.
Yeah, it's...
Maybe he just doesn't like it.
He's like, this moonshine is the worst. We make way better stuff.
He's like, I'm poisoned! And they're like, no, that's just what it tastes like. That's just it.
No, it just burns. The burn is normal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just part of it.
Yeah.
So Bellamy goes and, like, immediately knocks the cup out of Clark's hand. Mm-hmm. The Bellarks had points.
Yeah.
The Bellarks had points.
100%.
It's right there. And Clark is like, what the heck? Like, it wasn't us. Lexa calls for them to save Gustus because she loves Gustus. She cares about Gustus. Indra calls for Sky Crew to be searched. Lexa says, you know, Gustus warned me and I didn't believe him. When you killed Finn, did you wish it was me? Which is another really good line. That's a really good moment that Alicia delivers really well.
Yeah, it's very good. And, like, Clark can't deny it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
And so Clark sees Finn behind her, and I'm like, not this guy again. Another grounder finds poison in Raven's coat, and Raven's like, that was planted on me. Lexa's pissed. Octavia asks Lincoln to do something, and he's like, oh, please let me speak on their behalf. And Indra says, no, you're one of them, uh-huh. so definitely not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is another moment where I get a blurry little background yeah. gif. I should see if I don't think that I think I deleted them all off my phone. But I'll see if I can mm-hmm. hunt down the gifs from this episode and I'll put them in the Discord.
Yes, please. So Clark, doing another just like totally inappropriate time. Mm-hmm. Not that there is would be an appropriate time. But Clark goes over to Raven and is like, okay, Raven, if you did this, you need to be honest. And she's like, are you for real right now?
It's so bad.
She's like, listen, you wanted me to kill her yesterday. And at this point, I'm pretty sure it was 2 days ago, I think. But Raven just punches Clark in the face. And I really can't fault her for that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't either. Like, yeah. Clark is thinking with her diplomat brain and not at all with her, like...
Yeah.
real person brain, and she's very good at compartmentalizing
friend brain.
Yeah. Yeah, she's very good at compartmentalizing those like parts of herself, but mm-hmm. she becomes so shut off from the other parts of herself that she forgets to like function.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah. Clark, did we forget to pull the compassion lever today?
Yeah.
We forgot. So Raven's like, you're the only murderer here, and I'm like, that's not true because Ghost Finn is here. He's totally another murderer. And, you know, Lincoln obviously also, like, hides his face, like, oops, I also have killed.
Yeah.
Don't look at me. Clark sees Finn again, and she yells at her own hallucination. She looks nuts. And she goes, leave me alone. You're the one who turned yourself in. And so, you know, everyone sort of looks over, and everyone knows who she's seeing because mm-hmm. she said, like, you're the one who turned yourself in.
Yeah.
And I just feel like they all look back at her like, oh, honey.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
It's you know? Very, everybody's looking at her like, oh, we forgot this is also really f***ing her up.
Oh, bud.
Yeesh.
Yeah. So Abby tries to comfort her and she says, you know, Lexa's wrong. Like, you're not going to be haunted forever. Like, I got through it by loving you.
Mm-hmm.
And Clark pulls away from her and she's like, are you talking about Dad? This is totally different. Like, I didn't have a choice and you did. Abby says, no. And Clark says, you turned him in. Abby says, I trusted the wrong person. I thought Jaha would, like, talk to him privately. Clark is like, you knew he wouldn't stop. Abby says, I was trying to protect everyone. I was protecting you. And Clark walks off and then immediately goes, oh my God, we are the same. And I'm like, what just happened here? Please go. Please, what do you think about this scene?
This is another one of those moments where I feel like a lot of the, I don't know, I feel like the conflict between Clark and Abby, especially around Jake, was like mm-hmm. particularly contrived mm-hmm. because
sure,
but like I also understand being a teenage girl and not understanding why someone you love so much would betray someone you both so love so much, but like mm-hmm. it's also very clear that Abby was never Abby's goal And, like...
Right, and it's also, like, really quickly, like, Clark is, like, so upset about the Abby and Jake situation, and it's just like, Clark, have you thought for a second that that's literally exactly how Raven feels about you?
Exactly. It's very much, like, the anger is misplaced. With Clark,
mm-hmm.
and kind of, I feel like Raven is more justified in her anger than Clark is,
mm-hmm.
but I do feel like both of them are misplaced in a way, because Clark is mm-hmm. mad at Abby, even though it was Jaha who killed her father. Like, he made that decision. Abby expected to find a friend where she found an enemy, and that's not her fault for mm-hmm. thinking she could trust someone with, you know?
Right, yeah.
Whereas Raven is mad at Clark for killing Finn, which, like, I get her rage a little bit more because the blood is literally on Clark's hands. But she also then does realize that Clark was doing the kind thing because of what was going to happen to Finn.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, she can sort of understand her later. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So Clark sits alone and Kane comes to her. And he says, you know, you're not going to get through this by tearing yourself and each other apart. And he looks over at Abby at the moment and sits down. And he says, you know, Lexa really needs this alliance too. And she's flexible and she listens to you. Clark says, but now she thinks that we tried to kill her. And Kane goes, okay, but we didn't. So who did? And that might help us. Lincoln says, you know, lots of people would want her dead. She's risked a lot bringing us here. And like, okay, but like, thanks for eavesdropping. Lincoln, like, we were fully whispering
mm-hmm.
in this conversation, and he's like, let me just add something, which made me laugh. Before I go on, thoughts on Kane in this scene, if you have any?
I like when he gets to be more, like, good guy diplomat. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Octavia's like, okay, well, maybe it was someone who's trying to break the alliance. Like, you know, they're just brainstorming at this point. The Grounders enter. Lincoln asks Nyko if Gustus is okay, and he is. Indra comes in and they want to take Raven. Bellamy, like, stands up for her and is like, she didn't do it. In, like, the last little bit of this episode, the Bellamy and Raven crumbs
are
also very good.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was eating good this episode for all my ships. Like,
you really were.
This is,
like,
a feast.
I think I wrote it down every time it happens, uh-huh. but this is, like, the first real one that he's like, no, save Raven. It's really cute.
Yeah, this is such a feast of, like, shippy content for pretty much every, like, major pairing. Because you get Kane and Abby background crumbs, you get Bellamy and Raven background crumbs, you get Bellamy and Clark background crumbs, you get the start of Clark and Lexa. There's so many in this storyline, especially. And then over in the other one, you get Maya and Jasper kissing.
Yeah.
It's a good episode for that. And then you get...
Good stuff. It's good stuff.
Monty and Harper at the end, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nice.
What's going on?
Unfortunately, we just have to look at Finn.
Yeah, and somehow Finn is still here.
Yeah. So Indra's like, hey, I wanted all of you to die, but the commander says that she only needs one, so you guys are lucky. They try to stop it, but, you know, it's no use. They take Raven away, and Indra says, okay, the rest of you are free, but just so you know, as soon as she's dead, the Alliance is also dead, so you guys could probably get going. And they're like, we're gonna be sticking around, actually. We're not gonna do that. So Raven gets tied to a similar post as, like, Finn was. Lexa says, hey, sorry about this, but, like, justice will actually be done this time, so sucks for you, but yeah. And Raven goes, you know, it's actually not justice, because I didn't do it. Sky Crew watches, trying to, you know, figure out what to do, and Bellamy is freaking out. He's freaking out about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's good stuff. The Raven content is good. Lexa and Indra start cutting into Raven.
And I just want to say, like, shout out to Bellamy for being the only one who's like, hey, this is bad. We can't just let this happen to her. And all the other Sky people are just like, I don't know. I guess we have to let them kill Raven and pack our things and get...
Right. Clark didn't even come.
Get on the road.
Clark didn't even come.
Clark's not even up there.
Yeah.
Abby is like, let's go, Clark. Yeah. We have to go, Clark. What? It's time to leave. And I'm like, Raven is getting stabbed right in front of... Everyone's so stupid. I hate...
Hello? Yeah.
There's so much bad ADR in this moment, too. And I'm just like, oh, no, pack it up. Like, there's a line from Bellamy and, like, several lines from Abby. And I'm like, this was bad. Don't do this. This is, no.
Yeah. So Octavia pleads with Lincoln to talk with them, but Lincoln knows he's not one of them anymore and they're not going to listen to him anyway. So then Nyko says, you know, you're not safe here anymore. You need to go, but, you know, I'll try and help you, but you'll be on your own after that. And they hug. And I really love the relationship between Nyko and Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's underrated.
Yeah.
Abby tells Clark that they need to go because she's still in the dining room. Clark sees Finn again and yells at him to say something that you can hear Raven screaming from here, and she's just hanging out in this room.
Mm-hmm.
Finn looks down to the dropped cup, and like we talked about, this is just Clark's subconscious, Clark's guilt, reminding her to, like, think it through. Like, in her subconscious, she knew what the actual deal was.
Yeah.
And she realizes that the poison wasn't in the bottle, so she runs out. Sky Crew and Grounders both try and stop her, but Lexa is like, let her through, she's pretty. so she gets to go through. And Clark's like, actually, one of your people tried to kill you, and she drinks from the bottle to prove it. And she doesn't even flinch. Damn, she knows, how much alcohol is this girl drunk?
Right.
Because she takes it down, which I literally would not be able to do that.
Which is also strangely impressive for Clark, because isn't one of the, don't we see the first time that she drinks in season one with Finn? And
in season one?
Yeah, in the truck when they're hiding
from
the acid box.
She definitely drinks. I don't know if that's her first time. I can't remember.
I think that it's important.
But, I mean, we'll talk about it later, but...
I can't remember. We'll have to see it when we see it. Yeah. But I feel like that was a moment where Finn was like, oh, like, impressed with the fact that... Or he was either impressed with the fact that she was capable of it, or he goaded her into it because... she's such a goody two-shoes or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a headcanon that she's just sloshed for the whole rest of the episode. Like, she's like, you know what, Bellamy? Go to Mount Weather. I don't care. Whatever.
No, exactly. Exactly.
Like, I have to believe she's just absolutely fried at this point.
Uh-huh.
So she's like, it was in the cup, not in the bottle. And Gustus tries to, like, play it off like, oh my god, she's trying to trick us again. And Bellamy is the one who realizes who it was. It was Gustus. He's the one who drank it, and he's the one who planted it on Raven. And Lexa's like, actually, Gustus would never hurt me. And Bellamy's like, well, he wasn't trying to hurt you. He was trying to hurt the Alliance. He offered to drink it. He didn't want you to drink it.
Exactly.
And Lexa asks him to explain, you know, and she's just like, there's no way this is true. She's like, speak true, Gustus, go on. And Gustus owns it.
Mm-hmm.
He really thought that she would die over the Alliance and didn't want her to. This is my favorite Lexa moment. Lexa is shocked. She is shocked.
Mm-hmm.
But Alicia plays it so subtly. Like, it's literally just her mouth falling open slightly, but you can see in her eyes, she is absolutely, like, flabbergasted.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's an expert level, like, micro expression.
Yeah, very, very good. Yeah, and so she now has to call for him to get tied up now, even though she spent all episode, you know, acting like she really cares about Gustus.
Mm-hmm.
She clearly loves him, but is showing Clark that love is weakness. And she's like, I can't believe it. Like, she's like, I can't believe I did this again. I knew better, and I still loved him.
Uh-huh.
And when I say love him, like you said, it really seems like she loves him sort of like a brother or like a cousin or, you know, just some, at least a trusted friend.
Yeah, it feels very like, whatever it is platonic, obviously, because Lexa is textually a lesbian.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, it is a very deep, like, familial bond.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So Raven is freed, and honestly, heartbreaking for Lexa.
Uh-huh.
So heartbreaking for Lexa. Like, she literally has to kill him at the end of this. Like, that sucks.
Yeah.
That's so sad. So every villager is taking their turn cutting Gustus, and oh, he's struggling. And that's when Raven, not when she was tied up, but now, is like, oh my god, this is what would have happened to Finn, and forgives Clark, sort of, you know, subtextually. Lexa does that final blow and kills Gustus. And shout out, because Lincoln said last episode that, like, no one ever makes it that far. Like, almost everybody dies before that. So, I mean, shout out to this guy. And he says, stay huge, Lexa, which is a an inside joke that we have had for years, which is that stay strong, I think it is. Sounds like stay huge. So he says, stay huge. And it's a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, Abby sort of points out to Kane that their ways actually are pretty similar.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that, like, that's what makes her realize.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Is it like, what is she comparing it to? Is she comparing it to floating?
I think.
What do you think?
I think so. I think it's very much like, you have to be willing to sacrifice people for the greater good kind of situation. Because, mm-hmm. like, Abby, they all want to think that they're the better culture. And mm-hmm. I think Abby realizes we've both had to do horrific things in the name of survival. And so,
right, and
she gets
clearly
it.
Floating is like less violent,
mm-hmm.
but they're also floating people for nothing. Like, every crime, like, Gustus was not trying to kill the commander.
Yeah.
But he did something, and that's why he's been killed.
Yeah.
And, like, death by a thousand cuts? Does everybody who does something bad get death by a thousand cuts?
Right.
Or is it just people who... Right, like it was Finn because he killed a bunch of people. It was Raven because she was trying to kill the Chancellor. But Gustus wasn't trying to kill the Chancellor. Like, you know, it's just like, does everybody get the exact same punishment just like on the arc? Like,
does she consider the... Like, I wouldn't say everyone gets the exact same punishment, but does she consider, like, the amount of lives in the Alliance as part of, like, how many cuts he gets or something?
Maybe? Sam, I've got it.
Okay.
Raven, they thought Raven was trying to kill the Chancellor, uh-huh. right? And... Gustus tried to kill the Alliance, or tried to kill the Coalition. Gustus literally said earlier this episode that Lexa is the Coalition.
Uh-huh.
So Lexa's like, you try to kill the Coalition, you're trying to kill me.
Yeah.
You're the one who said that was literally me.
Mm-hmm. Oof.
So.
Devastating.
Woof. Yeah, so that night, Sky Crew is around the fire, and Lincoln asks Bellamy, like, how did you know? Bellamy's like, I'm really smart. He says, you know, Gustus clearly would have done anything to protect her, like, it just made sense. And, you know, Lincoln looks at Octavia, you know, he clearly thinks about how he would do anything to protect Octavia, mm-hmm. and I think that's interesting because so would Bellamy. They would both do anything to protect Octavia.
Absolutely. And I think that Bellamy and Octavia mm-hmm. is the relationship that does parallel Gustus and Lexa more. I do, however, also think that mm-hmm. he was thinking mm-hmm. of himself and Clark. Like, I understand why, like, people interpreting mm-hmm. that line in that way as well, because
mm-hmm.
I feel like I'd seen that connection drawn, because I'm pretty sure there's a yeah. shot in that scene when he looks at Clark while he says it.
Yeah. So then Raven starts hearing Jasper's signal on the radio. Like, she fixed the radio, and Jasper's saying, hey, there are 47 of us trapped inside, and Clark's like, oh my god, say something back. And Raven says, it's repeating.
Yeah.
And we've made our way back to the Lost reference.
Yes, you're correct.
First of all, that, yeah. Yeah. And so basically, like, in the second half of the pilot of Lost, there's this repeating message that has been playing for, like, I mean, 16 years. And, you know, they even say, like, say something. And they say, no, we can't. It's repeating, right? So that's definitely a Lost reference. And then also the fact that it has been being jammed as well for, like, the entire time, that also happens on Lost. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a Lost reference, and I refuse to hear otherwise. On IMDb, it said, the frequency that they use for talking on the radio is known as the aircraft emergency frequency, uh-huh. which is a frequency reserved for emergency communications for aircraft in distress. So I think that's just a fun fact that they, like, show a frequency and it just happens to be the aircraft emergency frequency and yeah. not, like, whatever frequency they're supposed to be using or whatever. But yeah, that's just what I saw on IMDb.
I like that.
So Bellamy says, okay, we need to get going. Like, we need to do this now. And Clark's like, you know what? You were right about the inside man thing. Clark, totally sloshed. You were totally right about the inside man thing. Bellamy says, I thought you hated that. Like, you said I would die. And Clark says, you're right. I was being weak. Clark
exactly. just
textually uh-huh. said she loves Bellamy.
Yes.
Textually said she loves Bellamy just now.
Exactly.
Hello? So Clark is like, well, it's worth it. So find a way to talk to us when you get in there. Bye.
Yep.
That's basically what happens.
Uh-huh.
And Clark, or like Octavia's like, huh? What just happened?
The math is not mathing for Octavia, but everyone else just yeah. saw something, okay?
Exactly. So Lincoln offers to, like, get him in through the tunnels, and Octavia's like, wait, like, you can't go back there yet. And they sort of, like, ignore her, and Raven shows Bellamy what to look for. Lincoln says, I have to do this, like, I need to make up for what I did. Mm-hmm. Octavia says she's gonna come along, and Lincoln says, no, they need you here, like, you can help explain our ways, and she promises not to let the Alliance fail.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Last scene of the episode, I think. Well, definitely last scene of the storyline. No, not the last scene of the episode, sorry, because they can go to Monty and Harper after that. But
yes.
Clark sees Finn one more time, and she goes, love is weakness, Finn. And Finn's like, okay.
I don't have to be weak anymore. Get out of here. Shut up. Oh, God.
Does she really believe that?
No.
Do you think she really believes that love is weakness?
I think that she thinks that in order to be a functional person and not gain more enemies, she has to believe it is. And
yeah.
she has to convince herself that that's true so that she can focus. Mm-hmm. However, I don't think... See, actually, here's the thing. I don't know. Because I would want yeah. to believe in the version of Clark that eventually... Exactly. We, like, talked about this earlier. That subverts love is weakness by
yeah.
using it as her strength. However, mm-hmm. the show never delivers that version of Clark, ultimately. Like, she always comes back to love is
right. Weakness. And I feel like, yeah, and to be fair, like, we keep saying, you know, they never do this, they never do this. And, like, you know, I haven't rewatched the show in, like, who knows how long. So it's possible someone's yelling at their phone being like, actually, they do that at this time. And feel free to email us if that's true. But, like, it clearly didn't make enough of a, like, impact on us for us to remember it. You know?
Yeah.
If it happened.
Well, here's the thing. Also, what I'm ultimately saying, even though if it happens in one or two episodes, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it happens at points with Maddie and with Abby and, like, other people that Clark loves.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
But, like, as far as a romantic love or as far as, like, the ultimate end game for her character, it never comes back to love as a strength because...
Yeah, yeah.
Clark is always going to lose when it comes to romantic love, and Clark never uses her love for anyone else to do the right thing. She is always making morally dark choices, which is interesting, because, like, if you're going to write Clark as a full-on anti-hero, then it's interesting. But it's this sort of, like, back-and-forth middle ground thing that ultimately, like, undercuts it all and makes it boring and bad.
Yeah. So Clark goes, love is weakness, Finn, and Finn just sort of, like, frowns and disappears. And I'm like, okay, well, whatever was going on there was kind of dumb, so bye, I guess. Then Abby shows up and she gives Clark some ashes from the pyre, and she's like, maybe we could scatter them somewhere so you could say goodbye. And Clark says, I already have, and follows Lexa away.
Yeah.
Like, all I could think is that her mom, like, holds it out to her and she just, like, smacks it onto the ground. And she's like, leave me alone, mom.
I'm too cool for this.
I don't need that anymore. Like, but you're right. Like, give it to Raven or something. Like,
exactly.
I hope she did secretly or, like, outside of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the episode.
Yeah.
Shall we segment?
Yes, we shall.
All right, you guys, now it's time for segments. My first segment is the post-apocalyptic sass watch, which is our favorite line award. There were some pretty good lines in this episode, but I felt like I had to go with sass due to my segment being called the sass watch. I gave it to Maya, Monty, and Jasper for
5 seconds.
What happens in 5 seconds?
Miller realizes what a dick he is.
Drag him.
Iconic.
Drag him.
Some of Jasper's best zingers, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And mine is not very sassy, but it's...
The dead are gone, Clark. The living are hungry.
From Lexa.
Yeah.
She's the best.
Yeah. Iconic.
Yeah. My first segment is what I say I'm shipping the most, and it's obviously Cabby. Obviously. Mm-hmm. However, honorable mention to both Clexa and Braven, because I got all my ships in this episode. And then other people also got even more ships. Like, those three were my ships the whole show. That was my ideal end game. Yeah. And so that's what I'm shipping the most.
Yeah, I think it's funny that, like, two couples kissed and you didn't pick either of them. No. Which, like, is totally fair, but I just think it's funny that there were, like...
There were actual... Yeah.
So many ships this episode. It was like, we were rich.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And my other segment is Robin's Murphy moment. Murphy is not in this episode. Bellamy is about to go into Mount Weather and will not see Murphy for a long time, but I'm sure Murphy is very worried about him. I'm sure. All right, you guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode.
Our music is Terminal by Good News Tunes.
Thank you to anyone sharing space with us while we recorded. Thanks to my dog.
Thank you to my wife and my friend Emily, and also our cats, because they were miraculously not annoying this week.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, that's saying something.
Big deal for them.
If you're a fan of Riverdale, we like to talk about that show too. We did seasons. I guess we did it all, didn't we?
Yeah.
We did it all. So we have a very large package to offer you to listen to all of our Riverdale podcasts. You don't have to watch Riverdale to listen to it. And we're going to be doing a shortened rewatch podcast starting in the summer. So, wahoo!
A very large package.
It's true.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of Stranger Things, we'd like to talk about that show too. We have done the first 3 seasons in their entirety, and we are part of the way through season 4. So come join us.
Yeah. If you're a fan of Lost, we like to talk about that show too. We are just finishing season 4 here, and then we'll be starting season 5 this year, starting in September. So looking forward to it. We have a spoiler section at the end if you want to listen along while you're watching for the first time. I have a friend who's doing that right now, and she says it's a really, really cool, great experience. So just saying. And we also have guests over there. So that podcast is my pride and joy, and I'd really appreciate it if you checked it out.
That's beautiful. You can follow the Fictionauta You can follow the Fiction Otters on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and our TikTok.
Yeah. Our Patreon, like I said earlier, is patreon.com/theafficionados. If you like what we do here, please consider donating, because it's expensive with our money and it's expensive with our time. And, you know, we're paying for our SoundClouds around this time of year. It's like $180 per SoundCloud, and we've got a whole bunch of podcasts. So, you know, we'd really appreciate your help over there. If not, check out our small businesses. That's another way that you can support us while also getting something really cool out of it. Or just word of mouth, telling a friend is also super helpful. So, yeah, thanks. You can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey. That's RobynEJFFrey pretty much everywhere.
You can follow me on Twitter at Sam Casey's, which is SamCasoris.
Yes, and the next episode is episode 210. It's called Survival of the Fittest, and we'll talk about that one too. Okay, love you. Bye.
Okay, love you. Bye.